Our last session is 25 minutes. I got 25 minutes to tell you everything you always wanted to know about Calvinism, but we're afraid to ask. Job had something to say during the break.
I asked Pastor Paul. I think we discussed this last year, but Pastor Paul wants to repeat it again. I was concerned because when Pastor Paul mentioned about free will, that it was destroyed in the time of Adam, I was asking him if it's safe to actually preach that free will has actually been destroyed in the time of Adam. And Pastor Paul had something.
You know, we use the term free will, and I'm really uncomfortable with free will. That as a term. Because I think the only person in the universe that has free will is God. He's the only one that's free to make any choice that he wants. So I don't like... So someone asked me, said, now, do you believe in free will? I'd have to say, it depends on what you mean by that. Tell me what you mean. If it means, if by that you mean that every human being is morally responsible for his actions, that he'll be held accountable for what he does, he'll be judged, and he's responsible for his action, I say, yes, I believe that. But if by that you mean that any human being can make any decision that he wants, although he's dead in sin and still make a decision to serve God or be righteous, then I don't believe in that kind of free will. I think sin has made our will in bondage, and I just don't like using the term free will. I think it's more of a humanistic idea. I'd rather preach human responsibility, moral responsibility. You're responsible for your actions, and you'll be held accountable to them. So you make real choices. Real, actual choices. But when you start saying free will, it implies too many things that I think maybe we should be careful about. My thoughts. We got a little chart here for you to help see this problem. And there are four views historically. I mentioned earlier the English monk Pelagius. Pelagius taught that Adam's sin only affected Adam, and that man is born without sin. Man is born in a state of pureness, like Adam was in the garden before he sinned. And so in the Pelagian view, man initiates salvation, and he completes salvation through his free will. Pelagians do teach free will. This was the teaching of Charles Finney. Now, there's another group called semi-Pelagian. Semi-Pelagian, and they teach that man initiates salvation. In other words, he takes the first step towards God, and then God responds with his grace. The Arminian view is that God initiates salvation. God's the initiator. He starts the process, prevenient grace, remember? And then man responds with his free will. But the Calvinist view is God initiates and completes. All right, so do we understand total depravity? Oh, I was supposed to give you those verses during the break. I forgot them. I failed. Isn't it in your notes? Oh, those were, I'm sorry, let me go back. P-E-L-A-G-I-A-N, Pelagian, P-A-L-A-G-I-A-N, Pelagian. Remember Pelagius, and it's Pelagian, P-E-L-A-G-I-A-N. So then semi-Pelagian, Arminian, you got that?
Yep.
Calvinism. Julius.
Pastor Paul, what's the Roman Catholic stance regarding free will?
Roman Catholics are generally semi-Pelagian. Semi-Pelagian, yeah. So, Again, going back to Aquinas, keep those away from me. Those are good. Of course, anything's good if you put large quantities of fat and salt. That's going to make anything good, right? And healthy, I think. Goes back to Thomas Aquinas. You know, so the fall is not comprehensive. So man initiates salvation. Man starts to move towards God, and then God responds and moves towards him. Now, from here on out, all of the other four points are going to follow logically. You got that? Logically. So both of these systems are very logical systems of thought. One point leads naturally to the other. So according to Calvin's view, if man is totally depraved and cannot choose God, but some people are saved, therefore the U on the tulip is unconditional election. Unconditional election. And, of course, unconditional means there's no conditions. Unconditional election is an act of God before creation in which he chooses some people to be saved, not on account of any foreseen merit in them, but only because of his sovereign good pleasure. We said earlier that each view has strengths and weaknesses. This is clearly the weakness. This is the hardest pill to swallow in the Reformed view. Romans chapter 9, though they were not yet born and had done nothing, either good or bad, in order that God's purpose of election might continue, not because of works, but because of his call, she was told, the elder will serve the younger, as it is written, Jacob I loved, but Esau I hated. Jacob I loved. Before they were born, I loved Jacob. Before they were born, I hated Esau. Number two, this is where people get confused. Election, unconditional election, is not fatalism. Have you heard the word fatalism before? Do you know that term? Fatalism is a system in which human choices do not make any real difference. No matter what we do, things are going to turn out as they have been previously ordained. Fatalism comes from the word fate. Fate was a Greek concept. In Greek mythology, there were three fates. These were goddesses. And as soon as you were born, the fates began, they had a big loom, and they would start to weave the story of your life. And so as they would weave a story on their loom, that would happen to you. And as they began to weave more and more events, you experience those events. When they ran out of thread, your life was over. So every event of your life happened because other beings had determined that was going to happen. And you had no choice. You just lived out what the fates had already determined. It's kind of the idea in the song, Que sera, sera. Whatever will be, will be. It doesn't matter what we choose, what we decide. It's already fated. It's going to happen. This is a pagan view. It's not a Christian view. Unconditional election is not fatalism. Because the Bible teaches moral responsibility. Every man and woman make real moral choices that they're responsible for. People try to characterize or caricaturize Calvinism. The boss is going after him. as fatalism, like it's robotic, so it really doesn't matter if I preach to that person, why should I pray, because whatever God chose, that's going to happen. That's not Calvinism. Calvinism teaches that men have moral choices that they really make that are real. And how unconditional election and moral choices work together, what's the mechanism? The Bible doesn't tell us. But it does tell us that men make real choices that they're responsible for. So we don't believe in, this is not fatalism. But we have choices to make that really matter. Any problem with that? Any questions about that? Michael?
Does this have something to do with hyper-Calvinism?
Yeah, generally hyper-Calvinism is associated with the idea that, well, maybe I could say it this way. Hyper-Calvinism de-emphasizes moral choice and human responsibility to such an extent that it almost looks like fatalism. So it's all just about God ordained, and doesn't take into account that the Bible plainly teaches that men make real decisions. Now, according to the Calvinists, ultimately those decisions were not just foreseen by God, but actually ordained. So, how that... What?
That seemingly contradicts our idea.
Yeah. Again, I told you, this is the weakness. And so the reason why a Calvinist says this is because, according to his view, that's what the Bible teaches. The Bible teaches that God is behind all events and ordains all events. And that the Bible teaches that men make real moral choices. What the Bible doesn't teach is how those two things can actually work together. You know, that's where we just, where the Bible's silent, we just have to be silent. How can it be that a man has real moral choice and God's ordained all the events in life? No idea. But it's not fatalism, because our choices matter. So fatalism, we just say, well, doesn't, if I've been called to be saved, I'll be saved, regardless of what I do or what I believe. If I've been called to go to hell, then I just will. So I'm just going to do whatever I want to do. That's fatalism, not Calvinism. But there's a nuance, right? It's close. It's hard to see the difference. Other thoughts about this? Yeah. Dawn?
This question, Pastor.
Yes.
Is it possible that, regarding free will and sovereignty, is it possible that man will do something that will alter what has already been foreseen, ordained by God?
Well, if that's true, then God's omniscience is limited. He doesn't really know all things. That's the view. There are people that believe that. Christian, godly people. Yeah. Some of them are my friends.
Small group?
I don't believe that.
They're not related to me. Because if they were, I would disown them. You can't be my son.
Pastor Paul, a follow-up question.
Yeah.
I think I heard that someone said man's decision affects eternity.
True? Well, it's tricky here, okay? This is tricky.
I think it's Gladiator who said that.
This is tricky. So do I believe that my decisions affect eternity? It depends on how you define that. I do believe yes, because I believe in moral responsibility. So I think I have choices to make. So those choices really matter. And those choices have eternal consequences. Yeah. But if by that, does that mean that God is waiting on me, and that if I don't choose, His plan doesn't come to pass? I don't believe it from that angle. There was a movie that came out a couple years ago called The Adjustment Bureau. If you haven't seen it, I recommend it. Or if you haven't seen it lately, I recommend seeing it again in light of this. Because it deals with this issue, right? Of choice, moral responsibility, or is there a plan? You know, I'm off the topic a little bit here, but hey, it's my class. I can do what I want, right? It's not really off the topic.
It's your choice. It's your choice.
It was actually ordained that I got it. It will have eternal consequences. It's interesting because this is not just a Christian discussion. This has been a discussion that philosophers have had long before the New Testament or Augustine ever came on the scene. It was one of the major issues in ancient Greek philosophy. There were two perspectives. So they were trying to determine what really is the deciding factor in the universe. And there were two choices, fate or chaos. And there were two different schools of thought. Chaos taught that man's decisions change the course of events. That the future wasn't decided because man hadn't made those choices yet. There was another view that said, no, fate is involved. There's already, our life is preset. And both of them had negative consequences, right? Because if your life is set in advance, then what does that do to moral choice? Just, it really destroys it. But at least it gives you the knowledge that there's something more than just this world, that there's a higher purpose in my life. There is a destiny that I have that I'm trying to live out. If chaos is king, then at least it restores human choice. But so what? There's no overarching purpose. There's no reason behind it. So, yeah, I'm free to make choices, but so what? It has no ultimate value. And the Greek philosophers never could answer that dilemma. And actually, the Western thought throughout history never have been able to answer it. So I think only in the Christian gospel do we have the answer. I think the Bible teaches that God ordains all events. Therefore, we have a sense that we're involved in something bigger. We're part of a massive, eternal plan that's already been set. And yet, human choice really matters. And so that means my decisions have value and importance. And I think only the Christian gospel is that answered at all. So does our decisions affect eternity? Yes, according to the way you define it. But those decisions also, at least the way I believe, have already been ordained by God's. Yeah. Other thoughts about that? Yeah.
Just to clarify, because you were saying there now.
I think there's a mic near you, isn't there? Yeah.
Because you were saying earlier that we're not talking about fatalism.
Yeah.
Because fatalism is, you know, when you make choices, that doesn't really affect.
You're not really. Fatalism is basically you're a robot. You're basically a robot.
Yeah, so it doesn't matter.
You're just pre-programmed. Yeah, that's fatalism. Yeah.
I just lost my thought.
I'm sorry. You want to think about it and see if it comes back to you?
Because I'm looking at all events are ordained by God.
Yeah.
Right? And we believe that.
And I do.
But then, so, and then you're saying that your choices can actually alter.
I'm avoiding certain terms.
Yeah, that's what I'm.
I'm avoiding that term.
Clarification.
Because I don't know. I don't know. Alter, like God had a plan.
Yes.
But now I made a choice, and he's
a choice that can be altered.
See, I think that's the Adjustment Bureau.
Oh my.
I don't think that's the Bible.
That's why I'm clarifying. That's why I'm clarifying because I think it's important that we be very clear on how we say this because it can, you know, the thin line with getting to fatalism into the sovereignty of God and the God's ordained things can actually be very thin. So that's why we have to be very careful on this issue. That's why I'm just clarifying.
Yeah, I'd be uncomfortable with saying that our choices altered God's plan. I mean, that's just me. I'm just talking me personally. So that would make me uncomfortable. Yeah. I wouldn't say it, but I would say that men make real choices. It's not an illusion. You're not a robot.
Right.
And those moral choices matter.
Yeah.
They're important.
Yeah.
So they have consequences.
Right.
They have consequences.
Yeah, but not necessarily will affect what God already ordained for you.
No, I think I say those consequences that are real.
Yeah, they're real, but they're already preordained.
Because God's behind every event.
Right.
Yeah.
So.
But my choices really matter.
So that doesn't really make you a robot. But
I'm not a robot.
Yeah, you make choices, but the choices you made, no matter what, will not really change.
But you see, there's another view, and that's what the view I'm avoiding. It's
so
called.
Are you here? I'm just clarifying it.
I'm trying to avoid this view. It's the view of open theism.
Yeah.
And here's the idea. It's a gigantic chess game. God's the master chess player. So no matter what move you make, he's got a plan. So you go here, he can get you. He go this way. You go here, and open theism takes it one step further. God doesn't know what choice you're going to make. So he's weighing. If you make that choice, I got to move for you. Oh, you started to move, and then move that. I got another plan for you. I'm uncomfortable with that. I think that's Adjustment Bureau and not the Bible. So I want to avoid that.
That's good. Thank you.
Yeah. But that's just my opinion and my view. And I'm trying to walk a fine line of answering your questions and yet being respectful of godly men and women that I love and appreciate and respect who hold different views. And that we're working together and we've got a common vision together and we want to see that vision accomplished. So, that because there are people among us. And I don't mean here in this room, or maybe there are, but among us in our every nation world who hold different views. So, yeah. Thank you. William, I saw you grab a mic, or heading towards grabbing a mic. And this is the last comment.
Yeah,
and I'm going home. you can
I'd
stay.
Like for you to comment on just having perfect will and permissive will. We always hear that.
Yeah, well, we talked about that, I think. Didn't we do sovereignty and providence earlier on? Yeah, it came earlier in our notes. So we look at that. I don't like those terms. The theological terms, let me see if I can get them here, are God's moral will or his will of events. Moral will or will of events. So, God's moral will is always that men will make righteous choices. And you always violate God's moral will when you sin. Sin always violates the moral will of God. It's not God's will that any should sin. Sin is always opposed to the moral will of God. But sometimes, a violation of the moral will, or maybe I would say all the time, fulfills God's will of events. Will of events. So, for example, Joseph said, "You meant it for evil, but God meant it for good." So what does that mean? It means that God ordained their sinful choices. You see, their sinful choices violated God's moral will, but it fulfilled somehow His will of events, which is an incredible view of God's sovereignty, that He can take the sinful choices of men and still cause his will of events to come to pass.
Come on, man.
Is this the same as...
We're past our time, but go ahead.
Is this the same as the Romans 8:28 thing?
God causes all things to work together for good?
All things good and bad, sin and not.
I think so. I like Ephesians 1 verse 11. He works all things after the counsel of His will. We also have Acts chapter 22, I think it's verse 27, where Peter in his sermon says that you delivered Him up to the hands of sinful men according to the predetermined plan of God. So, sinful men made a sinful choice of which they're morally responsible for before God to surrender Christ, and yet that was God's predetermined will. Did He predetermine their sin? No, sin always violates His moral will. But He predetermined His will of events that it would happen. Put that in your theological pipe and smoke it. Well, that ought to give you something to think about on your commute home. Okay, we'll see you guys. Remember, next week, I guess our morning meeting has been preempted for another meeting, but we are in the afternoon next. Yeah, okay. Yeah. God bless you.